it's time for the Des Moines Register, and today is Thursday, February 15. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. My name is Twyla Glenn, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Dave Stutz. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinion, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer Voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at weather and headlines from today's Des Moines Register. According to AccuWeather, across the state today, it's going to be breezy in the morning, otherwise mainly cloudy today. Winds north-northwest 8 to 16 miles per hour with a little snow at times tonight. And the forecast through the weekend for central Iowa looks like this. Today and tonight, a high of 39 and a low of 24. Breezy in the morning, otherwise rather cloudy today. Winds north-northwest 8 to 16 miles per hour and a little snow tonight. On Friday, breezy in the afternoon with a high of 32 and a low of 18. On Saturday, sunny and breezy with a high of 40 and a low of 27. On Sunday, a high of 50 and a low of 30, sunny and milder. Looking at precipitation, we're still a little low, 24 hours ending 4 p.m. Wednesday. We've had zero precipitation. Our month to date, we've had just a trace against a normal of 61 hundredths of an inch at this time. Our year to date, 1.91 inches against a normal of 1.69 inches. And last year at this time, we'd had 2.14 inches of precipitation. Snowfall. And during the 24 hours ending 4 p.m. Wednesday, zero. And the month to date, zero. Normally, by this time of the month, we would have had 5.5 inches. Our season to date is 30 inches, and our normal season to date was 26 inches. Sunrise today was at 7:11 a.m., with sunset tonight at 5:47 p.m. Moonrise today at 10:12 a.m., and according to this, moonset today, it says none. I think that means it's not going to set before midnight. It may mean something else, though. I may not know what that means. But it says none, so no moonset today. Turning now to the front page of the Des Moines Register, there is a large picture in the middle of the front page entitled State Wrestling Week, and it's a very wide shot of the interior of Wells Fargo Arena, and apparently Algona's Brody Shipler is the wrestler that we're looking at, although you couldn't prove it by me. It's a very small wrestler down in the middle of the picture, this picture being taken from high up in the stands at Wells Fargo Arena. The wrestling tournament continues through Saturday when 42 individual champions and three team champions will be crowned. And you'll probably hear a lot more about that when our next shift gets to sports. The headlines on the front page read like this. Democrats walk out as election bill advances. The Adair police chief is guilty in the machine gun case. And a bill would arm school staffers and require officers. So the bill would require officers in the school, presumably, and arm school staffers. And now here with the first story is Dave.
Thank you, Twyla. We'll start out with the lead story here. It's a political story. That relates to the upcoming elections. Stephen Gruber Miller wrote this story. Two Democrats walked out of a House subcommittee meeting this week on an election bill that would make it more difficult for Iowans to challenge Donald Trump's place on the 2024 general election ballot. The wide-ranging election bill would allow federal candidates convicted of felonies to appear on Iowa's ballot, ban ballot drop boxes, ban ranked choice voting, and change the deadline for when absentee ballots must be returned to a county auditor to be counted. At a House subcommittee meeting on Tuesday, Representative Bobby Kaufman, a Republican from Wilton, interjected as Republican Amy Nielsen, a Democrat of North Liberty, was speaking. "Stop interrupting me," Nielsen said. "I did not interrupt you," Kaufman replied. This is my subcommittee, and I will refer to whoever I want to refer to whenever I want to refer to them. You don't run this meeting, Representative Nelson. As Kaufman gave his closing comments a few moments later, Nielsen said, quote, "You don't need me," end quote, and walked out of the room, followed by her colleague, Representative Adam Zabner, a Democrat from Iowa City. Both Democrats returned to speak to reporters and offer criticisms of the bill after the subcommittee meeting concluded. It takes quite a lot of nerve to call a bill an election integrity bill when the point of the bill is to let felons run for office, Zabner said, and particularly someone like Donald Trump, who has so little integrity. Kaufman, who worked for Trump's presidential campaign in Iowa as a senior advisor, said it has nothing to do with Trump and that his motivation for the bill is, quote, maintaining the highest level of election integrity, end quote, in Iowa. It is not our job to decide who's on the ballot, Kaufman said. It is the voters' job, and it's arrogant, frankly, for us to think that we should overrule what they choose to do, whether that's a D or an R or an independent or a libertarian or a Green Party or anyone else for that matter. The Iowa House and Senate advanced identical versions of the bill, House Study Bill 697 and Senate Study Bill 3161, through subcommittees this week. Both chambers are set to consider the bills at the committee level before the end of the week. The Iowa bill would limit the grounds for any challenges to a presidential candidate in the general election. Political parties are required to submit a certificate with the names of their presidential and vice presidential candidates to the Iowa Secretary of State's office 81 days before the general election. Under the bill, challenges to presidential candidates would be limited to whether that certificate meets all the legal requirements. If the bill in Iowa passed, Iowans could still challenge Trump's eligibility in court, but not through the state's law for objecting to candidates appearing on the ballot. Candidates for other federal offices, like Congress, could only be challenged on the candidate's age, residency, citizenship, and whether their nominating papers meet all the legal requirements. Requirements for federal candidates are set out in the U.S. Constitution, and states do not have the authority to place additional requirements on federal candidates as they can with candidates for state office. Candidates for Congress and the presidency would no longer have to sign an affidavit attesting that they know they are disqualified from holding office if they have been convicted of a felony. That means they could appear on Iowa's ballot even if they have been convicted of a felony. Trump faces 91 felony charges in 4 criminal cases around the country, and he has faced challenges to his candidacy under Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment that bars officials from holding office again if they, quote, have engaged in insurrection or rebellion, end quote, against the United States. We are not going to become a country of 50 different laboratories for right-wing and left-wing activism, Kaufman said. The voters who choose a president need to be the ones who decide it, not the legislature. Zabner called it unbelievable that Kaufman, who worked for the Trump campaign, is managing the bill. I just think Iowans need to let that set in, he said. Someone who worked for the Trump campaign is here passing a law specifically to help Donald Trump. The bill would change the deadline for returning mail-in absentee ballots, requiring them to be delivered to the county auditor's office by close of business on the day before Election Day in order to be counted. Currently, absentee ballots are accepted as long as they arrive by the time polls close on Election Day. County auditors would also be allowed to begin mailing absentee ballots to voters 2 days earlier, starting 22 days before Election Day rather than 20 days under current law. Iowa Republicans have steadily shortened the state's early voting window from 40 days to 29 days down to 20 since taking full control of state government in 2016. In-person early voting would remain at 20 days under the bill. Senator Jason Schultz, a Republican from Schleswig, who chairs the State Government Committee, said there are differences of opinion among Republicans about the length of the early voting period. "I guess my goal is to find a place where we can stay long term," he said. Senator Janice Wiener, Democrat from Iowa City, said she would support letting county auditors sign out mail-in absentee ballots 25 days before an election so that voters who requested a ballot by mail would already have it by the time in-person early voting began. That would save a lot of folks from coming in for early voting and saying, "I don't have my ballot yet," she said. Counties would also be required to send voters 3 envelopes with every absentee ballot. While some counties do use a 3-envelope system, some use just 2 envelopes when handling absentee ballots. Adams County Auditor Becky Bissell, who chairs the Iowa State Association of County Auditors, said it would be difficult for counties to purchase all new envelopes before the 2024 election. Voters would be required to mark their absentee ballots with a 4-digit voter verification number. County auditors would no longer be able to set up ballot drop boxes for Iowans to return their absentee ballots under the bill. Bissell said drop boxes are saving counties in Iowa several thousands of dollars in return postage costs thanks to voters choosing to use the drop box rather than the United States Postal Service. She said drop boxes also provide a more accessible option for voters with disabilities or limited mobility. Drop boxes provide an opportunity for voters to ensure their ballot is received in time without relying on uncontrollable external factors such as the Postal Service, she said. Wiener said drop boxes are convenient for voters. "Think somebody with a small child in a car," she said. "Think of an elderly person or someone who is mobility challenged and so forth, who can drive up and drop it in rather than having to get out and go in." A wide-ranging 2021 election law allowed county auditors to set up 1 drop box at the auditor's office under video surveillance. Kaufman called ballot drop boxes, quote, "a COVID product," end quote, and said, quote, "they're no longer necessary," end quote. It's unnecessary when there's a drop box in every city, in every county in the state of Iowa, he said. They're blue and they say USPS on them. Ranked choice voting would be explicitly banned under the bill, although a person for the Iowa Secretary of State's office said Iowa law already prohibits the practice. Several people at Monday's Senate subcommittee spoke up in favor of ranked choice voting, which involves voters ranking each candidate in order of preference. If the voter's first choice candidate failed to win support, their vote would be transferred to their second choice candidate, and so on until one candidate received a majority. David Guion, executive director of Better Ballot Iowa, a group that advocates for ranked choice voting and other election changes, said Iowans are interested in the option. "Just keep the conversation going," he said. "There is no reason to stifle the conversation and ban ranked choice voting today. Let's have a healthy conversation." Karen Person, vice president of the League of Women Voters of Metro Des Moines, said ranked choice voting would save taxpayers the cost of paying for runoff elections and could encourage more moderate candidates. "Ranked choice voting may encourage candidates who work for the common good," she said. "Candidates in an election using ranked choice voting may be more likely to support the issues that benefit a broad range of citizens rather than working for a special interest group that fund their campaigns. Speaking after Tuesday's House hearing, Kaufman said he and other Republicans do not like ranked choice voting. Ranked choice voting is political warfare for people that cannot win elections, in my opinion, he said. I cannot stand ranked choice voting. Twyla?
Thanks, Dave. Adair police chief guilty in machine gun case. A small-town Iowa police chief has been convicted of abusing his authority to buy or request demonstrations of dozens of federally regulated machine guns, a jury decided Wednesday. Bradley Wendt, chief of the three-man Adair Police Department, was found guilty on 11 of 15 federal charges after a six-day trial. The jury began deliberating shortly after noon Tuesday, and the verdict was reached Wednesday at 3:15 p.m. The case centered on Wendt's dual status as both a police chief and owner of two Iowa gun stores. Under federal law, most machine guns cannot be sold or transferred unless for use by or demonstration to a law enforcement agency. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives requires purchase orders or authorization letters from a police agency before approving such a transfer. Prosecutors said Wendt falsely told the ATF the weapons he wanted transferred to his gun store were for his police department, when in fact he wanted them for his own use and eventual resale. He also was charged with conspiring with two other gun store owners to help them acquire machine guns on false pretenses and with illegally using a gun registered to the Adair Police Department for a machine gun shoot organized by his private gun store. All told, Wendt signed more than 30 letters seeking approval to transfer 90 weapons, although his attorneys noted that nearly half of those transfers never took place. In each letter, he specified that the transfer would be for the official use of or demonstration for possible purchase of the guns by the city of Adair, which prosecutors argued was flatly implausible. The Adair Police Department did not need an order for demonstration or purchase 90 machine guns for some Goldilocks-style effort to find just the right fit, prosecutor Michaela Shotwell told the jurors. Prosecutors focused on 13 letters in which they argued Wendt's statements were clearly false. The jury found him guilty on 9 of those charges. In one letter seeking approval to purchase 3 MP7 submachine guns, Wendt certified that the weapons were for official use and not for resale or transfer. In fact, when the guns arrived more than a year later, Wendt posted them for sale in new-in-the-box condition within 6 months, profiting personally by $60,000 on the sales. In the same day the third was sold, Wendt submitted a new letter seeking to buy 3 more MP7s, although his attorneys argued of a slightly different model with different features. Other letters prosecutors presented as evidence included one Wendt wrote seeking a demonstration of a G36C assault rifle. Not only did Wendt write the letter for a Florida gun shop as a favor to a friend of a friend, prosecutors said, but he had already written 3 such letters for G36Cs and had been given a demonstration by at least one of the recipients previously. Wendt also wrote letters seeking and in some case getting approval to purchase heavy crew-served military machine guns, one of which he mounted on his personal Humvee. Perhaps most brazen, according to prosecutors, were the letters he wrote asking for demonstrations of MP5 and MP7 submachine guns by a firearms dealer in Alabama. In these letters, the defendant is asking for a demonstration of the exact guns he is selling so that he can decide if he wants to buy them, prosecutor Michaela Shotwell told jurors. That's the only way he's going to see that $30,000 profit, she said. In fact, Shotwell said, Wendt repeatedly told friends on Facebook he needed the chief of police job and the authority to write ATF law letters that came with it, specifically to acquire more machine guns. This chief of police gig is awesome. Send machine guns to my own gun store, he told one online acquaintance. On Monday, Wendt testified in his defense, saying that each letter he submitted sought weapons he sincerely thought might benefit the police department. Wendt said that while working for the Denison Police Department, he'd advocated to obtain machine guns in case officers were forced to respond to an active shooter. After becoming chief in Adair, he had the same concern and said he looked for guns with interesting or innovative features and signed demonstration letters for them. Even for guns not typically associated with police work, such as the 50 caliber so-called Ma Deuce M2 machine gun Wendt mounted on his car, he testified that he needed to see a demonstration to know whether it would be suitable for Adair. Several such guns are owned by Iowa police departments, he said, and Adair officers could conceivably be called on to assist the military. This particular machine gun, if you come across it working with another department, the officer should be familiar with it, he said. Under cross-examination, he maintained it was reasonable to request demonstrations of dozens of weapons, even those with little obvious relevance to police work. You have to determine if it's suitable or not suitable, and how would you do that without a demonstration, he asked. Wendt also was found guilty of conspiracy as well as the charge related to the machine gun shoot. Prosecutors alleged two separate conspiracies involving Wendt. In the first, he wrote several letters to authorize the transfer of 24 weapons to an Indiana dealer, Jonathan Markham, 10 of which were eventually received. Jurors heard that Markham was expected to send some of the profits from reselling the guns to Wendt for the Adair Police Department. Prosecutors introduced as evidence messages between the two in which Wendt commented, "I'm sure it will benefit us both," to which Markham replied, "Oh, it definitely will. We're going to make some money," Markham said in his reply. The second alleged conspiracy involved an Iowa friend, Robert Williams, who opened his own gun store and who initially was charged alongside Wendt. Prosecutors said the two had an understanding that Williams would buy whatever machine guns he wanted, and Wendt would then write letters claiming they were needed for demonstrations. Wendt testified that he never accepted money from Markham and blamed the other dealer, who by then was cooperating with the ATF, for the so-called ghosting of him, and never demonstrated any of the weapons he obtained. As for Williams, he said, the other man was a regular at his store, and the two had frequent conversations about what kind of weapons he'd want to see for the police department. Jurors convicted Wendt of conspiracy with both Williams and Markham to make false statements to the ATF, although they rejected prosecutors' alternate theory that Wendt conspired to defraud the federal agency. Court records show charges against Williams were later dismissed. His company, Williams Contracting, pleaded guilty to conspiracy and was fined $40,000 in November. He did not testify in Wendt's trial.
Thank you, Twyla. This next story was submitted by Samantha Hernandez of the Des Moines Register, and it deals with a legislative bill that would arm school staffers and require officers in the schools. Just weeks after a shooting at Perry High School, a bill that would allow Iowa schools to arm staff and require others to hire school resource officers is advancing in the Iowa legislature. The bill would also give school staff qualified immunity against legal action if they are armed. The Republican-led House introduced the bill more than a month after police say Dylan Butler, a 17-year-old Perry student, fatally shot Amir Joliffe, an 11-year-old sixth grader, and wounded seven other people, including Principal Dan Marburger. Marburger, who police say tried to intervene to protect students, died 10 days later. Butler was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot, authorities reported. This is not the first time Iowa lawmakers have tried to clear the way for school officials to arm staff. A previously passed state law gave school officials the authority to have employees carry firearms, but two schools that were ready to allow staff to carry weapons reversed course after their insurers said they would not cover them because of liability concerns. Those who registered in favor of House Study Bill 675 said neither the current law nor the bill addresses the longstanding issues around companies declining to insure schools where staff are approved to carry guns. After more than 30 minutes of discussion on Monday, the three-member committee voted 2-1 to advance the bill. Here is what you need to know about House Study Bill 675. What would House Study Bill 675 do in Iowa schools? House Bill 675 would require school districts with 8,000 or more students to have at least one security officer or school resource officer in schools where 9th through 12th grade students regularly attend school. Private schools and public schools with fewer than 8,000 students are encouraged to contract with or employ a security guard or school resource officer. The bill also allows school districts, private schools, and colleges and universities to arm staff. Those who want to carry would need to go through a permit process that includes one-time in-person legal training covering qualified immunity, annual emergency medical training, and annual communication training approved by the Iowa Department of Public Safety. The department would also need to implement required annual live scenario training and quarterly live firearm training for school employees with permits. What is a school resource officer? School resource officers, also known as SROs, are trained law enforcement officers assigned or contracted to work in the schools. They have full police powers. Des Moines Public Schools ended its SRO program several years ago. How will Iowa school districts cover the cost? The bill, if passed, would require the Iowa Department of Education to create a school security personnel grant to provide up to $50,000 per district in matching funds to help cover the cost. During Monday's hearing, it was suggested lawmakers increase the amount because some school districts, including Des Moines, have more than one high school. Question: does Iowa law allow school staff to carry firearms? Yes, Iowa Code 724.4B allows approved school staff to carry a gun on campus, but few schools have tried to implement the law. Question: why aren't Iowa schools arming staff? While Iowa law allows school staff to be armed, it does not require insurance carriers to cover those districts. During the 22-23 school year, Spirit Lake and Cherokee school districts approved arming staff. In June of 23, officials at both schools reversed their decisions after EMC Insurance declined to cover the two small rural districts ahead of the 2023-24 school year if staff were allowed to carry weapons. Question: how does the Iowa study bill differ from Iowa law? Unlike the previous code, the House bill includes a qualified immunity provision for permitted staff. Qualified immunity is a type of legal immunity that protects a government official from lawsuits alleging that the official violated a plaintiff's rights, according to Cornell Law student websites. Proponents of the bill say this is a step in the right direction. We had implemented guns as a safety measure in our school, had it in place for 6 months, and then EMC told us they were going to terminate our insurance, said Spirit Lake Superintendent David Smith during the hearing. So we had to go away from it and were struggling to find a new carrier. We know immunity is a big piece that will help us find people from the outside to come in and insure us. The insurance issue is why more districts, many of them in rural areas, have not explored the option, said Panorama Community School District Superintendent Casey Huebner. This includes his own district. District families have been asking him about security since the Perry shooting in early January, Huebner said. His district is about 20 miles away from Perry Community School District. I have 1,400 parents that are trying to trust me to keep their kids safe, he said. All right, regardless, I'm going to be running towards the fire. All I ask is that I actually have the chance to go back to my family, because I would be prepared enough, he said. Huebner also spoke in favor of districts adding school resource officers. Question, have lawmakers tried to fix the insurance issue previously? During the 2023 legislative session, Iowa lawmakers introduced House File 654, which would have prohibited insurance companies from denying coverage to districts who want to arm their staff. The bill did not pass in the Senate. As House Study Bill 675 progresses, the hope is EMC will meet with lawmakers, said State Rep. Phil Thompson, a Republican from Boone. No one from EMC signed up to speak during the hearing. I think this sets a very good bar, a very good standard for our schools to participate, Thompson said before announcing the bill would advance. And it allows those schools that want to do the right thing to protect their kids to do just that. We do have some insurance issues to address. Question, who opposes House Study Bill 675? Several groups registered against the bill. Roosevelt High School student Hannah Hayes opposed the bill on behalf of Students Demand Action. We ask that you oppose this bill because of its provisions of qualified immunity, Hayes said. To arm school personnel raises concerns about accountability and oversight, further undermining the bill's efficacy and potential for unintended consequences. As a student myself, I can tell you that adding more guns to schools is not going to make me safer. Iowa ACE 360, a coalition of groups that support policies to strengthen families, said the bill did not go far enough to address student safety, including mental health support. Our primary concern with the bill is that addressing school safety requires a comprehensive strategy, said Lisa Gussart, the organization's executive director. And this just focuses on one, and as we've heard some other folks talk about, there's a lot of different things within the different safety plans.
And that concludes the stories from the front page of the Register. We'll move now to the Metro and Iowa section. And the headline story here says, no makeup days slated for Perry students. Perry students will not need to make up the roughly 3 to 4 weeks of classes that they missed following January 4 fatal shooting at the high school, Superintendent Clark Wicks told the Perry School Board on Monday. Iowa law requires schools to provide at least 180 days or 1,080 hours of instruction each school year. Wicks said the state has waived that requirement for the Perry District. The schools were shut down in the wake of the shootings, which occurred as students were at breakfast in the high school cafeteria, preparing to resume classes after the winter break. Dylan Butler, a 17-year-old Perry High School student, killed Amir Jolief, who was 11, a student at the adjacent middle school, fatally wounding Perry High School principal Dan Marburger and wounding 2 other staff members and 4 students before taking his own life. School resumed on January 24 at the elementary, January 25 at the middle school, and January 31 at the high school. Because we missed quite a few days since January 4, we asked the State Department of Education for a waiver so that we could move forward with our calendar and give everyone the expectation that when school would be letting out, Wicks said after the meeting. Though the district will not need to make up the missed days, it will have to make up any snow days moving forward, Wicks said. The high school senior schedule will remain unchanged, with the last day of school on May 22 and graduation on May 26. The last day of school for other students is currently set for May 29. The calendar is a big deal because people need to know, okay, we're going to be making up these days for 3 weeks. Fortunately, that is not the case, Wicks said. We are very grateful to the State Department of Education.
Thank you, Twyla. A school library gets a bright, cheery makeover as an Earlham girl uses her Make-A-Wish request to benefit others. Kyle Werner of the Des Moines Register submitted this story. In kindergarten, kids are introduced to the magic within library walls. For one Earlham student, it also was when she was recovering from cancer. The two things have come together this week in a unique wish fulfilled. Adeline Ory, that's O-R-Y, was diagnosed with a glioma, and that's G-L-I-O-M-A, in the temporal lobe of her brain in 2021. She had surgery at Stead Children's Hospital in Iowa City, but the tumor could not be fully removed due to its location. But that didn't stop Adeline. After 18 months of a new kind of trial chemotherapy, she's more than back on her feet. "If you didn't know, you wouldn't know," her mother said. As Adeline completed her treatment, her parents, Summer and Dan Ory, were connected with Make-A-Wish, Iowa. Adeline's got to make her wish around the time she had been introduced to the magic of the library, getting lost in the pages of Fancy Nancy and other books. So when Adeline's mother asked her, "What is your wish?" her response didn't come as a shock. The new and avid reader wanted to give the Earlham Community School Library a colorful and inviting makeover. She had just started her kindergarten year, and they had just started checking out books at the library, her mother said. So, of course, that was on her brain. The school and Make-A-Wish, Iowa, had nothing but support for the idea. "This was one of the ideas we wanted to renovate anyway, so the timing of her wish and where we're at with it is just absolutely phenomenal," Earlham Elementary Principal Jason Hammond said. "We're excited to work together with Make-A-Wish and make this happen." After almost 2 years of construction, the library was revealed Monday to students, teachers, school officials, and most importantly, Adeline and her family. Make-A-Wish Iowa CEO and President Sarah Kurvosky said the Earlham team brought Adeline's first grade class to the bright new library to soak up the new space. "We categorize this type of wish as an I wish to give wish," Kurvosky said. "They're more of a wish, so when we heard about Adeline's wish, it was very exciting for us." The school library serves around 650 students in the K-12 school district. It will be for everyone in the school to use and enjoy. "It's one of the most selfless wishes I've ever heard a kid make," Earlham School Superintendent Stephen Castor said. "There's just a lot of things that kids could ask for. This is something that gives beyond the individual, so it's very thoughtful." While the library is still not quite finished, the students have already begun to utilize it for all it's worth. First grade teacher Jody Dvorak read to the students Monday. Adeline picked out the book, Thelma the Unicorn, because she likes unicorns. Now Adeline and every student at Earlham can enjoy the newly updated library that her wish made a reality. "The thought that this wish can get magnified to the whole entire school so they can use it for collaborations in the future is just incredible," Adeline's mother said. So kudos to Adeline.
And there's a lovely picture here of Adeline and her family in the new place. That's a good story for us to have today. Thanks, Dave. Iowa lawmakers debate race, history, and schools as education bills advance. Iowa lawmakers tussled Tuesday evening over school curriculum, engaging in partisan debates about how to teach about U.S. history, race, and the role of what's called social-emotional learning as Republicans move to advance a slate of education bills ahead of a Friday legislative deadline. Among the GOP-led bills advanced by the House committee is one that would outline specific topics, people, and documents to be taught in grades 1 through 6. This is House File 2330. And another that commissions a full review of the state's core curriculum, educational standards, and content standards aim at discussions on race and, again, what's called social-emotional learning. This is House File 2329. Under the first bill, social studies Day's curriculum would be required to include such topics as what's called history and meaning of the United States flag and national anthem, and what's called the cultural heritage of Western civilization, the United States and the state of Iowa, and the study of and devotion to the United States' exceptional and praiseworthy history. Those are quotes from the proposed legislation. Fifth and sixth graders would be required to study what the legislation calls common sense, the revolutionary, revolutionary era pamphlet by Thomas Paine. They would be required as well to study the writings of Alexis de Tocqueville and transcripts of the Lincoln-Douglas debates, among other topics. Whether we want to believe it or not, with our emphasis on STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, math and other things, we begin to focus on over the course of the last decade or so, said Representative Steve Holt, a representative of Denison. That's why I have been so deeply concerned, because I've talked to so many young people and they cannot tell me about the greatest generation. They can't tell me about December 7, 1941. They can't tell me about Normandy, but they can tell me about all the negative stuff, he said. The bill encountered broad criticism from Democrats, who warned it would be burdensome to districts and educators and was too specific, emphasizing that some parts of history while minimizing others. I think being incredibly prescriptive in curriculum is not the job of this legislature, and that this bill fundamentally is legislative overreach, said Representative Heather Mattson, a Democrat of Ankeny. The other proposal would require the state's education director to conduct what's called a comprehensive review of all the graduation requirements, curriculum, content, and educational standards, and recommended policy changes in a report to Governor Kim Reynolds and the legislature by the end of the year. Both bills advanced to be eligible for House floor debate, keeping them alive through Friday's first funnel landmark of the session, alongside several other educational proposals. Committee Democrats expressed a range of concerns with the social studies legislation, arguing that it was too prescriptive and would put teachers and districts in a bind, that several of the topics were not age-appropriate for grade schoolers, and that the curriculum did not suitably address either the darkest parts of U.S. history or world history. These particular prescribed lists gives me pause, says Representative Molly Buck, a Democrat of Ankeny, who is a teacher, not because I have an agenda, but because as a teacher, I just don't know where the time would come from, she said. Mattson noted that she had been told the list of curriculum topics was derived from the Civics Alliance and National Association of Scholars, citing an article that refers to the blueprint as, quote, the right's new social studies plan, end quote, and requesting that any additions to core curriculum come from within Iowa. Asked to clarify what the bill's description of devotion to American history could mean, Representative Brooke Bowden, Republican of Indianola, the bill's sponsor, said it would mean teaching what he called the founding principles of the U.S. Our standards are far too broad and vague to provide useful guidance, and it's time to address the issue, Bowden said, arguing in her closing remarks that, quote, this is not a bill about curriculum, this is a standards bill, end quote. Lawmakers backing the plan to review curriculum and standards are also requiring that any policy recommendations made by the education director include making, quote, Iowa's educational standards the best in the nation, end quote, and eliminating what the proposed legislation calls the teaching of critical race theory and social-emotional learning. Those recommendations surfaced familiar debate among lawmakers as to the exact definitions of those methods and why they could apply to within and what they could apply to within K-12 education. Representative Skylar Wheeler, a Republican of Hull, who co-sponsored the review plan, argued that the method in question could be used to install and insert some of these different things to divide kids based off of traits they can't control. That's a quote from Skylar Wheeler. And he said he believed social-emotional learning was similar to critical race theory. Social-emotional learning is commonly referred to within educational circles as a method intended to tie emotional and social skills into school curricula. Critical race theory, conceived as an academic framework to study history through a lens of race, has been broadened in scope by conservatives across the U.S. in recent years to include discussions in K-12 classrooms about race and inequity. Democrats on the committee warned against lumping together the two concepts and warned that eliminating social-emotional learning could affect many different curriculum programs.
How bad does it have to be to get a snow day? Well, it depends on where you live, according to CNN. Every student in Iowa knows the sweet feeling of relief when that snow day alert comes through, but not all flakes are created equal. CNN collected data on how much snow it takes to get school canceled based on location. The study shows, unsurprisingly, that where you live and snow tolerance in the area make a difference. In places like Oklahoma, it can take less than 2 inches of snow for schools. In places like Oklahoma, it can take less than 2 inches, according to CNN. But in a wintry state like New York, some parts of the state can handle up to 10 inches of snow before schools start to consider a closure. How much snow does it take to cancel school in Iowa? Well, in Polk County, it takes 3 to 4 inches of snow for schools to start calling for cancellations, according to CNN's analysis. But in northeast Iowa, it'll take about 4 to 5 inches. For southern Iowa, it only takes 2 to 3 inches before schools get concerned. CNN recorded data from more than 400 counties, and of them, only 83 begin cancellations within 3 to 4 inches of snow, while 95 will cancel within 4 to 5 inches of snow. Only 44 will cancel school for 3 inches of snow or less. David Sulkin created the Snow Day Calculator that predicts school cancellations. He told CNN that he observes factors like local terrain, if an area is flat or hilly, and levels of an Iowa's winter preparedness, like the availability of salt trucks and snow plows, to determine if a school district might cancel classes. In 2019, the Register asked officials from the Des Moines metro districts about school cancellations due to weather, and while reporters found there's no magic number, most officials said a wind chill of minus 25 to minus 30 degrees is when discussions about delaying or calling off classes begin. Des Moines Public Schools doesn't start considering cancellation until the National Weather Service issues a wind chill advisory, or maybe I should say a wind chill warning. That happens when the wind chill reaches minus 25. There are a lot of other factors they take into consideration, Phil Roeder, a district spokesperson, recently told the Register. 2 inches of only snow is a lot different than 2 inches of snow, along with ice from freezing rain, for example, Roeder said. Waukee spokeswoman Amy Vacro said in 2019 that when deciding if the weather warrants school cancellations, Waukee schools consult with nearby schools, Iowa DOT, law enforcement, weather stations, and review local media reports. A decision to delay a cancel or school is typically made about 5:30 a.m. and at the latest 7 a.m. although changing weather conditions can change that. Our number one priority is our student and staff safety, and that is what our decisions are made on, Vacro said at the time. I'm going to read another story here to take us up to the top of the hour. Democrats seek a workaround for Ukraine-Israel aid bill. Dateline is Washington. House Democrats are laying the groundwork to force a vote on the $95 billion foreign aid bill that passed in the Senate early Tuesday, despite fierce opposition from House Speaker Mike Johnson, who was a Republican from Louisiana. It would mark a significant coup if Democrats are successful. They're aiming to use the rare procedural move known as a discharge petition, which would require at least 218 signatures, including those of at least some Republicans, to bring the legislation up for a vote. The passage would appropriate $60 billion to support Ukraine, which has been battling Russia since February of 22. It also will send $14 billion in military assistance to Israel, $9 billion in humanitarian assistance to Gaza and elsewhere, and nearly $5 billion to defend Taiwan. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries, a Democrat from New York, sent a letter to fellow Democrats on Tuesday saying the caucus would use every available legislative tool to advance the bill and called upon traditional Republicans to step up in the House. The Democratic leader said during a news conference that he believes there are at least 300 votes in the House to pass the foreign aid bill, including an overwhelming majority of Democrats. Representative Andy Biggs, a Republican of Arizona, a member of the ultra-conservative Freedom Caucus, said he's big on the bill, but he told a conservative talk host Tuesday that if it were to get to the floor, it would pass. Let's just be frank about that. The legislation cleared the Senate with 70 votes on Tuesday. Only two Democrats and Senator Bernie Sanders, he's an independent from Vermont, voted against it alongside a majority of the chamber's Republicans. The Senate's vote reflects similar diversions in the House. A growing number of Republican lawmakers have raised concerns about sending additional aid to Ukraine, and the progressive wing of the Democratic Party has protested further aid to Israel without conditions for more humane treatment of Palestinians in Gaza. But the moderate conditions in both parties appear to remain the dominant voice in the House and Senate, and they're preparing to flex their muscles. This place runs on majority. Representative Annie Kuster, Democrat from New Hampshire, chair of the centrist New Democrat Caucus, told USA Today last week. She said bringing the left wing of her party on board would be possible by adding conditions that the Israel aid is used in accordance with international law. Kuster also predicted there are likely more than the five necessary Republicans willing to stand up to their leaders. Several moderate Republicans who represent crucial swing districts also indicated to USA Today that they were not quite ready to go against their leader. Representative Mario Diaz-Balart, a Republican from Florida, noted that the House passed its own bill to fund Israel aid that the Senate has not picked up yet. That bill included cuts to the Internal Revenue Service funding that made it unpalatable to many in the upper chamber. And a few little short notes here to take us again up to the hour. From the state of Virginia, top Democrats in the Virginia Senate have dealt a blow to legislation to help pave the way for the NBA's Washington Wizards and the NHL's Washington Cardinals to relocate to Northern Virginia, refusing to docket the bill for a hearing and expressing serious reservations about the financing of the proposed deal. From Washington, Vancouver, U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg toured the century-old Interstate 5 bridge that connects Portland, Oregon with Southwest Washington State, a vital but earthquake-vulnerable structure that's set to be replaced as part of a multi-billion-dollar project supported by federal funding. West Virginia, Charleston, Smoking in cars with children is banned in 11 states, and lawmakers are pushing to join them in West Virginia, where more adults use cigarettes than anywhere else in the nation, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In Madison, Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin is significantly staffing up under a new hiring initiative. The college expects to recruit between 120 and 150 new faculty members over the next 3 to 5 years, in addition to regular hiring. And in the state of Wyoming, a police officer serving a trespass warning has been fatally shot in northern Wyoming. Over the next several years, the University of Vermont Health Network will install 6 new state-of-the-art linear accelerators for improved radiation treatments to combat cancer at Central Vermont Medical Center, the University of Vermont Medical Center, and 2 Northern New York hospitals if it gets the green light from the Green Mountain Care Board. Salt Lake City, Utah. The city held its first scourgering competition, and I don't know if I pronounced that right. How about I spell it for you? SKIJORING. Over the weekend, with thousands of visitors in attendance, Public Utah Radio reported. In Austin, Texas, Marisol Springs, a proposed luxury resort on 1,400 acres straddling Hays and Travis counties in a relatively undeveloped area, has been a subject of controversy. Central Texas environmental groups and concerned citizens say the hotel marketed as an eco lodge could threaten the local ecosystem. The hotel developers argue that Marisol could get a precedent for sustainable growth in the Hill Country, having set aside nearly 1,000 acres in a conservation easement, as well as entering into a partnership with the University of Texas. Tennessee, Nashville. Less than a year after Tennessee Republicans attempted to expel her from the state house, Democrat Gloria Johnson is seeking another term while simultaneously waging an uphill campaign for U.S. Senate. In Pierce, South Dakota, a bill to ensure all children in South Dakota's foster care system have a standard of active efforts applied to their cases that failed on Monday. South Carolina, in Greenville, the Greenville County Sheriff's Office released additional information on a deadly December shooting involving deputies in an 81-year-old man. The sheriff's office released a critical incident community briefing that included body camera footage from 3 officers and the 911 emergency call that led to the incident. Rhode Island dragons will replace dinosaurs at the Roger Williams Park Zoo this spring and summer, running from April 7th to August 11th. The zoo's Dragons and Mythical Creatures exhibit will bring visitors on a mythical journey where folklore meets reality as they encounter 60 life-size dragons and other creatures that exist somewhere between science and imagination, the zoo says. Pennsylvania, in the city of Erie. Erie Events continues to move forward with plans for a year-round, multi-million-dollar indoor market house on the city's West Bayfront. But the organization now believes the facility's price tag has gone up significantly, and it will be seeking additional financing for the project. Erie Events Committee Director said that based on new construction cost estimates and other data, the facility is expected to cost between $10 and $12 million. And finally here, from Portland, Oregon, the federal government has finalized 2 areas for floating offshore wind farms along the Oregon coast, authorities announced, bringing the state closer to commercially developing and producing a renewable energy source that's part of the fight against climate change.